You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast sponsored by Bet365. Each and every Friday we'll be here to preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action, and joining me to do just that is my co-host George Ellick and Bet365's Steve Freith. George, I'll come to you first. How are you?
I'm good. I feel excited. I feel like we're being rewarded for persevering with the football season without any fans, having to watch countless games on the sofa. I've already been to a couple of EFL games. I was at Bournemouth against West Brom on the last Friday night. I was at the Valley for Charlton against AFC Wimbledon, the Glamour Tie, the Carabao Cup. And having fans back in stadiums is incredible. So I can't wait for the Premier League to get started and for all those fans to get back into their grounds and watch their teams.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I cannot wait for an away day on Saturday. It's been absolutely way too long doing normal things like that in my life. And Steve?
I'm a lot more relaxed now Jack Grealish has left Villa. I can start to enjoy him a bit more, Dan. I can start to appreciate the qualities that super midfielder has.
I tell you what, one day I will do a podcast without Jack Grealish coming up. But now, unfortunately for me, it's coming up in a wind-up sense rather than just having a nice little chat about him. But never mind. There's been another small move in the transfer market as well, Steve, with Messi's gone to PSG, which a few weeks ago would have been completely mad. Champions League, I mean, I presume they're favourites now.
Yeah, well, you know what? PSG are actually 11-4 favourites to win it for the first time, of course. Lionel Messi as well, everyone wants to know how many goals is he going to get. He's actually 10-1 to score 40 or more goals. I think we're just thinking that he's going to score a hatful when we do see him. It will be interesting to see how he gets on, of course.
Plenty of Messi content as well on The Athletic, as well as Jack Grealish as well. But before we dive into the podcast, let me quickly remind you that you can sign up to The Athletic and read those pieces and much, much more. And if you do that at the moment, you'll save 33% as well. So that's just £3.33 a month for an entire year. Right then. First game of the Premier League season. It's a Friday night kickoff. Not sure I'm on board with games starting on a Friday in the Premier League. This isn't the EFL, but George, Brentford were EFL. Sorry, that was a bit harsh, making that like you're your EFL standard. Yeah, that was a bit
Steve's
out
a baggage
order.
Fan, not me, Dan. Come on.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know why I did that. Brentford lit up the EFL, to be fair, for a number of years. I used to hate it when Villa had to play them because we never beat them in the Championship. But they're now in the Premier League and it's going to be really interesting to see them. What can we expect from them?
Yeah, it will be. And just on that Friday night Premier League point, I actually agree because it means that no one's watching me on Sky on a Friday night if there's a Premier League game on because everyone's watching that instead.
With
Brentford, it's interesting because, you know, I was reading some quotes from Thomas Frank, their manager, today, and he was talking about how they were going to attack the Premier League. And there's no doubt that they are a very good attacking side. You know, they were the top scorers in the Championship last season. But I don't think this is going to be a continuation of the kind of teams we've seen come up and try and blitz the league before. You know, Leeds managed to do it successfully. We've seen, you know, dating back nearly a decade, we saw Blackpool do it successfully for half a season and then fall away and get relegated. We saw Norwich in their last campaign coming up and playing this really attacking brand of football and getting relegated bottom. And even Sheffield United, to an extent, did it in their first season up and did it better. I don't think this is what we're going to see from this Brentford side, even though they are a very proficient attacking team. And the main reason for that is because Thomas Frank, their manager, is pretty pragmatic at the end of the day. Like, even though they did score a lot of goals last season, it was built upon a pretty solid foundation, a decent defence. And that defence is mainly remaining the same. Ethan Pinnock and Pontus Janssen, two defenders who deserve their chance here. And Christopher Ayer from Celtic comes in to be the third member there. And that is going to be the difference, I think, is that they're not going to be a side who necessarily concedes loads of goals and scores plenty too. I'd anticipate they're going to be probably more built on a solid foundation and looking to get the ball into Ivan Toney wherever possible, because this is a player who I'm pretty bullish in saying it now, and I even said it before last season, he'll be playing for England very soon. It's a matter of time until he's scoring Premier League goals, and as soon as he does do that, he'll be getting it in the England squad. And quotes of 40-1 with Bet365 about him being top goal scorer, you could do much worse, because he's a player who's been top goal scorer in League One, top goal scorer in the Championship. He's going to start every game where he's fit for Brentford, and he's definitely got the talent to cause Premier League defences a lot of problems.
I can tell you he's absolutely not going to do any of those things, George, because he's straight in my fantasy football team, so that's absolutely finished him for the season.
Between us, we've got him
there. And Steve, you're used to getting promoted and coming back down. Why are Brentford not going to go back down?
Well, I think everyone's, you know, rightly applauding them for the way that they go about their business, particularly in the transfer market, the model that they do. And I think we're all excited to see actually how they do. You know, the three teams that have gone up, they're the outsiders of the three, so to speak, to be relegated. Listen, to do anything like Leeds did last time, I think it's a big ask, isn't it? I can't really see them doing anything like that. But as George pointed out, Ivan Toney, I'm not sure he'll get as many penalties, George, this season. But of course, we've seen players come up from the Championship to do well. I'll reference Ollie Watkins there, Dan, for you, of course. I mean, Charlie Austin finished with fourth with 18 goals when QPR came up. They ended up bottom of the league. So these players can nick a place in the each way market because there are four places. And we even got a market on how many goals Ivan Toney will score this season. And we're only 12-1 for him to score 20 or more, which I think is, we're very respectful of that. And it's 11-8, 10 or fewer. So I think we're expecting Ivan Toney to have a good season.
Yeah, the thing about Toney that always strikes me, George, is his belief in himself, the way he speaks about himself. I actually love that.
Yeah, he's a confident boy, and you can only have to look at his way of taking penalties to see that. I mean, anybody who hasn't seen Ivan Toney take a penalty yet is in for a treat when he steps up for his first one in the Premier League, because he basically stands outside the area, does a straight run-up where he walks at kind of slower than walking pace towards the ball before caressing it into the back of the net, never taking his eyes off the keeper, never looking at the ball. And that sums him up as a player. He's got immense faith in his own ability. It feels a very long time ago that actually he underwhelmed for his first couple of games last season for Brentford, missed a couple of sitters. A few Brentford fans were there saying, you know, he's no Ollie Watkins. And then look what happened towards the end of the season. He's an exciting player. And Brentford know that if they're going to want to keep hold of Ivan Toney, they're going to have to stay up, because if they get relegated this season, he's gone in the summer.
Yeah, and Steve, let's look a little bit at Arsenal. It's never too early to start thinking about when Arsenal might implode. What do the markets say for them this season? What should we expect from Arsenal?
Yeah, I mean, listen, 2 8th place finishes, clearly. That's where Arsenal are at the moment. Gone are the days of them, you know, challenging for the title. They're 50-1 to do that. They're 9-2 to finish in the top four. 11-8 to finish in the top six. Who'd have thought that, you know, a number of years ago when they were in the top four every single season. I think question marks about the manager, of course, Arteta. I think his supporters will point out to the fact that they're the fourth best side in the calendar year, actually, after the second part of last season. But of course, you don't get Champions League football for that as well. And it's after the Brentford game, Dan, it's a tricky start, isn't it? It's Chelsea and Man City, the next two games. I know they did the double over Chelsea last season, which was a big turning point, I think. I think it was Boxing Day when Arsenal won that game. And when we saw the emergence of more of Smith Rowe and, of course, Saka as well. I'm waiting to see how Pepe does this season. He had a great end towards last season, and we're scoring a number of goals. And I'm interested to see how he does this campaign. Do I see Arsenal challenging the top four? Maybe not. But they might finish above Spurs, you know.
I mean, the only thing I'm surprised at there is that you didn't mention their odds on relegation, Steve. I would have said that was more likely than top four. I think it would have been better to read them out.
Well, do you remember when they played 14 games and they were just hovering, weren't they, above the relegation zone? And we were actually quoting that. I'm thinking, they're not going to go down, are they? And there was still a massive price, but I really couldn't see it. You know, they're 66-1, Dan, to be relegated, and 500-1 to be bottom at Christmas. How about that?
Might put a quid on. George, then, I've got a sneaky feeling that Brentford might take something in this game. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, there's parallels between this game and Arsenal's first game of last season, where they travelled to West London and came up against a Fulham side who'd just been promoted. And Fulham put in one of the worst defensive displays I've ever seen. And Arsenal beat them 3-0, just littered with individual defensive errors. That's not going to happen here. Or if it does, I'll be very, very surprised. This is going to be Brentford's first Premier League game ever in their new stadium, full of fans. Thomas Frank again this morning in his press conference, I think yesterday, saying that he's anticipating similar atmosphere to England against Denmark in the semi-finals of the Euros, which I can't quite see, but I can see what he's alluding to. You know, he's desperate for Brentford to make this as close to Griffin Park as possible. You know, I speak to a lot of EFL players, and they all, to a man, said the worst place you could go for an away game was Griffin Park every time, because it felt like the fans were on top of you. And Brentford have lost that advantage of having such a tight stadium. But at the same time, you feel like their home advantage here will tell. I think it's going to be a really tight game. I think that Arsenal often flatter to deceive towards the back end of the season. It was the same story at the beginning of last season, where they had such a good run when they weren't really playing for much, and everyone thought Arteta was going to lead them to a better campaign. It didn't really happen. Not much has changed. Saka looks unlikely to play, given he's only just returned back to training. Aubameyang, so woefully out of form last season. Pepe looks to me a luxury player. I think it'll be tight. The two kind of bets are flagged for this game, under 2.5 at even money, and the 0-0 at 11-1. Sadly, a bit of a snooze fest on the cards for me on Friday night.
Yeah, I think it'd be a low scoring game, like George says. I'll be looking towards under 2.5 goals, but I wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal nick it. Pepe is more than a luxury player, George. We'll see that this season, pal, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. First disagreement of the new podcast. Let's move on to a game of two teams that never agree with each other, or two fan bases that will never agree with each other. It's Manchester United against Leeds. And George, Man U have conducted their business well this summer. Not something we've said a lot over recent years, but Sancho and Varane, elite level signings, and I think this is what the Manchester United fans have wanted.
Unbelievable signings. You know, Rafael Varane is 28 years old. He's a player coming to United at what should be the prime of his career as an elite centre-back. Jadon Sancho is one of the brightest talents in world football, coming to Manchester United, where his progression should really increase, and we should be seeing a world-class player in the next couple of seasons. I've got to be careful when I talk about Manchester United, because I've upset some of their fans in the past with my attitude towards their manager. And over the last year or so, I have begun to understand that as a United fan, given what's happened at the club since Sir Alex Ferguson left, having a manager who is just bringing a positive mentality to the club has value. I still find it totally perplexing that United fans look at their team and still maintain that they're one or two players short of mounting a title challenge. I think if you gave United squad to Jurgen Klopp or to Pep Guardiola or to Thomas Tuchel, or actually probably a few more Premier League tacticians, they would be a lot shorter than the, what are they, 8-1 to win the Premier League? I mean, this is an elite squad. They're a holding midfielder short of being world class. But at the same time, I'm told by United fans, when I say that Scott McTominay isn't good enough, that he is, and then suddenly they're saying they need another elite level defensive midfielder. I think the decision to give Solskjaer a new 4-year deal now feels risky, because he's finally been given a team and a squad with which he should perform. And this should be the litmus test for him as a manager and a tactician. Where are they in December? Because there's no excuses if they're fourth this time. There's no excuses if they're fifth. So I'm surprised they've done that. It's a hell of a first game for them against Leeds. I thought this tie, the first time these two teams played last season, was probably the highlight of the Premier League campaign in that ridiculous high-scoring game. But I'm excited to see this new look United.
Yeah, and Steve, this does feel like the season that they need to, well, they definitely need to win something, but they do need to get closer to that top spot and have a real, real title challenge. Did the odds class them as big contenders?
Yeah, listen, these are the two best back sides in our anti-post outright market, would you believe? Manchester United and Leeds. The Leeds bit may surprise you, but they are...
It does.
Always well backed, just to win everything. I mean, last season, George, as you all know, they were backed for top four, top six. Top half was a big bet for a lot of people. And of course, that copped. But yes, the shooters were on. But as regards to the Manchester United, Dan, 8-1. I mean, we saw last season the amount of... They got the nil-nils, didn't they, against the big sides. They ended Manchester City's 21-game run as well. But Ollie is always, of course, under scrutiny. And away from home, that run continues. I think they're still 66-1 to be unbeaten away from Old Trafford this season as well. And a good question for you guys here. Where do you think Manchester United will finish? We have a market on where they'll finish. Have you got any opinion on where they will end up this season?
Fifth. For me.
Fifth. Mm. Fifth, 7-1, George.
I thought my fourth was going to go down badly. But fifth, geez.
Yeah, the fourth, we fancy. Well, that is the favourite at 130, Dan. And of course, I'll touch on silverware as well. They haven't won any silverware since 2017. This is Manchester United we're talking about. They are 6-4 to do that, 1-2 that they don't. Interesting season for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Oh, I'm interested to know who's in George's top four.
Leicester would be crashing the party in my book. You know, I don't want to make this a running theme. I just think that as long as Ollie's in the job, there are going to be games against teams who are weaker on paper where they will come unstuck because they're going to be outthought by someone who is a Brendan Rodgers, for example, even though I'm not necessarily sure Leicester are that much weaker. It's consistent. I can't see them ever being able to maintain a run of form over a long-term period where that doesn't happen fairly consistently.
That's you alienating Manchester United fans. My
dad's a United fan, so hopefully that it's because I care so much, guys. It's because I want them to do well.
Yeah, I'll probably alienate Arsenal fans on a fairly regular basis, judging by my start. And Steve's already alienated himself from me with his comments at the start of the podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're listening to the brand new Athletic Football Podcast, and this is what we have planned for you across our network this season. The Ornstein and Chapman Podcast has been rebranded as the Athletic Football Podcast. We'll release 4 episodes across the week as our journalists bring you the very best insight into the biggest stories in football and the business of sport. Michael Cox will continue to bring you the smartest analysis of all the big games in the Athletic Football Tactics Podcast. Adam Hurry will now host 2 episodes of the Football Clichés podcast every single week with his usual take on the game. There's a brand new Athletic FPL podcast with our fantasy football expert, the FPL General, giving you all the advice you need to stay ahead of your mates and top of the FPL rankings. And the Athletic Podcast Network is also home now to a host of club-specific shows, some of which are going to be releasing multiple episodes every week. And we're now your destination, don't forget, for the Totally Football Show with James Richardson and the Totally Football League Show. And that is it. We can't fit any more in. All you've got to do is search for The Athletic in your podcast provider of choice or go to our podcast section on the Athletic app. Not surprisingly, with all of the stuff that I've just mentioned, The Athletic is now the world's biggest football podcast network.
Let's talk about Leeds then, Steve. You mentioned that they're a heavily backed side. By looking at the bets that are taking place, where would you expect them to finish?
I think Leeds fans would be like to be challenging top six, Dan. In all honesty with you, I don't think that's too far-fetched. Clearly, the squad, let's see how they progress. I'm really interested to see how Rodrigo does this season. The way he ended last season, Rodrigo, I thought was great. There's a lot on Bamford's shoulders, of course. Listen, Leeds were around 7-2 to finish in the top half last season. They're only 4-6 to do that this, and just 9-2 for a top six finish. I think they were about 33-1 last season. So it's a progressive side. It's a side that we love to watch as a neutral. I love watching this. We talked about the 6-2 game at Old Trafford. Do you remember when they went to Anfield? Was it the first game last season? They just had a right go. I don't see anything changing with that. I think we're expecting goals in this game as well, Dan. You know, over 3.5 goals is around 6-4. And also, How are Leeds going to be dealing with set pieces this time around? I think they conceded the most last season, around 15. Mm. And Manchester United have brought in a set piece coach as well. So I might be looking towards Harry Maguire to have a bit of fun this weekend.
Interesting. Give me a score prediction then, Steve.
I will go for 2-2.
Nice. George?
Yeah, I've gone for my selection here is over 2.5 goals and both teams to score at 21-20. I think that surely there are going to be goals here. Both teams shouldn't be too many fatigue issues. Both should be, well, certainly the players who start should be ready for this. So I agree. I think, yeah, 2-1, 2-2 or 2-1 one of the ways. But there's one I want to flag. If I was to pick any player in the Premier League this season who I think will be being linked to all the big clubs in Europe come May, it would be Rafinha. He scored 5 and 26 last season in his debut Premier League campaign. Every aspect of his game is a wide player. He's a great ball carrier. He's creative with his passing. He's a good crosser. But crucially, he gets into really good goal scoring positions. And by the end of the campaign last season, he was putting them away finally, because I think he probably should have scored more. We often see with players of that ilk, the way that they progress. You know, remember that Riyad Mahrez season for Leicester after a kind of quiet first campaign. He then caught fire the second time round, and I can kind of see Rafinha doing something similar here. Bamford at 4-7 is short. You know, he's a great goal scorer, and I've got no doubt he will score a fair few, but you know, 13-14 goals could easily win this, and Rafinha has to basically maintain that output over the 38 game season and build on a little bit in order to challenge. So yeah, 7-1 I think is one of the best anti-post bets you can have ahead of the Premier League campaign.
I mean, the way George spoke about him there, Steve, you might want to go and put a bet on him for Player of the Year. Where's he sitting in those odds?
Are we still talking about Lionel Messi then? George, I think I better be cutting that 150 to one of ours for Rafinha to be PFA Player That's of the big. Year then after that glowing endorsement.
Mm.
Great player. And yes, he's in the fantasy team. I know that. Yes, he is a very exciting talent.
Right, let's move on to the next game. You may notice a pattern in the games that we're previewing this week. It's Norwich against Liverpool. I think they played each other at Anfield on the first game of the season a few seasons ago. As
4-1,
well.
So, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, Norwich are back, George. And it's a bit harsh, this, I think, in the old script. Are Norwich worse on paper than the last time they were promoted?
Dan, you wrote the script. Don't pretend to
be. No, not in that.
No, they're definitely not. I mean, there's... It's one of my most frustrating... Well, it's not frustrating because hopefully there's an angle where we can make some money, but the narrative around Norwich is completely false. They've lost Emi Buendia, sure, and he's another player who I think this time next year people will realise how good he is. Villa have played an absolute blinder by signing him.
Excellent.
But one player doesn't make a whole team. And last season in their promotion campaign, they were just a much better side than they were a couple of years before. You know, they conceded 57 goals in that first promotion. They conceded 36 last season. Ben Gibson is one of the smartest pickups any team has made in the country for a long time, and is a player that Norwich fans are delighted to have. And Grant Hanley had a great season for them as well. Max Ahrens and Todd Cantwell, if they both stay, come back to the Premier League as much better players. Ollie Skip was a crucial loan signing for them last season. They've lost him. But by bringing in Billy Gilmore, it's hard to think they've really downgraded there. And I'm so excited to see what Gilmore does over the course of the season. They brought in a couple of attacking players to kind of ease the load on Teemu Pukki. But Pukki himself is a player who scored 11 Premier League goals for a side who are pretty desperate. You know, it's interesting that you mention that first Norwich-Liverpool game, because that kind of felt like a bit of a sliding doors moment for me, where I think if Norwich got what they deserve from that game, it could have been a very different season. Everybody who watched that came away thinking this Norwich side is superb. And then 3 months later, they were the laughingstock of the league, and that was unfair. I'm sure Daniel Farker has learned a lot from that first campaign at this level. The fact that they went so far to making sure that the style changed, you know, to become a team who could keep clean sheets. And it wasn't the case of, right, you score two, you will score three. We'll set them up much better for this campaign. And another, you know, in the specials market, top newcomer, with Bet365, the 11-4 outsiders of the three, Norwich, seems bananas to me. I can't work out how a team who were clearly the best of the three last season, sure they've lost one player, but they have kept a fair few too, and I think have the benefit in the dugout of having the best manager of the three. I can't work out why they are the outsider of the three. And as any horse racing fans will know, often the outsider of the three can come through and spoil the party anyway. So
yeah, that seems really bizarre. I wasn't aware of that fact going into the podcast. Steve, Liverpool then. Van Dijk's back. That's going to obviously improve things tenfold for them as well. Actually having some defenders this season might help. They had, I mean, since the pandemic, it's just been a complete nightmare really for Liverpool, hasn't it? But you'd expect some improvement this season, but I'm presuming they're not title favourites.
No, they're joint second favourites, Dan, with Chelsea at 5-1. A long way behind Manchester City, of course. And you're right about, it was a strange season last season, wasn't it? They were top at Christmas for the third successive season after, remember when they smashed Palace by seven? I think yeah. They'd only lost one game. I think that was against your boys, wasn't it? Which was a strange game in itself.
Business as usual, Steve.
You know, and then their unbeaten record at Anfield was still intact. What was it 68 games or whatever it was? And then they went on to lose not one, not two, not three games on the trot at home. Six games on the trot at Anfield in the Premier League. It was just an incredible run. And incidentally, Dan, we do have a market on them to be unbeaten at Anfield this season in the Premier League, which is 6-1. But they did end the season really well, didn't they? I'll mention the Alisson winner at the Hawthorns in case you do, because I know you will. And that, incredibly, they ended up finishing third. And yeah, I think it was the 20 different centre-back partnerships as well. You've talked about the defenders coming back. And I think that 5-1 maybe for Liverpool has been a little bit disrespectful. I think Mane is going to be refreshed and having a better season. Mo Salah is an elite goal scorer, and you can always rely on him. 96 goals that he's scored or whatever in the four seasons he's been here. A lot will be on his shoulders, although he does, I think, miss the due to the African Cup of Nations as well. 9-2 each way for him to be top goal scorer in the Premier League. Certainly tickles a few fancies for the each way thieves out there, I'm pretty sure.
It looks like George Shaqiri's going to be on his way, but someone that lit up the EFL last season that could take his place in the squad. I think he's had a good pre-season so far. Is Harvey Elliott. Talk to us about him.
He's so exciting. I mean, I feel like I'm just sitting here waxing lyrical about different wide players, but he's a player who is so unique in the way that he plays football. You know, he is very capable at getting the ball down and dribbling past players, but he has this incredible ability for you know, essentially a winger, to play these raking deep balls. He's going to be a superstar. And I really hope that, you know, quite often I think this stage of the season or pre-season, we hear about players, young players doing well at certain clubs. You know, Andreas Pereira, it happened to about seven times in a row at United, and we're told this is going to be the season they break out, and it doesn't happen. I think surely with Elliot and this campaign, we are going to see him break through, and he's a player to keep an eye on. I mean, I think that the 5-1 about Liverpool is the standout bet in this market, unquestionably. I think they're being completely forgotten. There are so many mitigating factors at hand with the poor campaign last season. So in a way, I would almost say that they are better as a squad than they were when they won the league a couple of years ago. And I can't see them having the same issues at all. I mean, there's one bet I think is standout in this Norwich-Liverpool tie, where Mo Salah is 11-5 first goal scorer. And then you've got all of the other attackers in at about 9-2, which, I mean, I know that Salah's the most likely, and I know that Sadio Mane's been out of form, but I think that the 11-5, 9-2 discrepancy just feels too big to me. Mane's been the one. I mean, I hate talking about pre-season in betting terms or anything else, because I don't think it matters, but Mane has been the one in the goals in pre-season, Salah yet to find the back of the net. There's a lot of pressure on Mane now to play well and retain his place. So I think backing Mane each way at 9-2, so you're getting profit if he scores at all, is too big. And that's the way I'd go about this one.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Let's have a quick look at Newcastle against West Ham then, Steve. Newcastle, a team always in flux, always in crisis, although Steve Bruce appears to be getting on the verge of a new contract. What do the markets say about them? Are they one of the favourites to go down?
Yeah, six favourites down at 11-4 to go down. I was recently at a friendly Burton against Newcastle, and I was surprised about such negativity that I was hearing and seeing there from the Newcastle fans. Even in a pre-season friendly, they were making their feelings very, you know, very well known about their football club. They had a good end of the season last season, didn't they? I don't know whether that was Graham Jones coming in, but it certainly did work to treat. And all eyes on Callum Wilson keeping fit. He has a great record against West Ham, by the way. He scored in 8 of the 9 games he's played against them. So I'm sure he'll be popular first goal scorer this weekend.
It's interesting you mentioned Graham Jones, because I do think it's often overlooked a bit. He has a very good track record of being an assistant manager. He came in to Newcastle to assist Steve Bruce on the 27th of January. If you take the Premier League table from then, Newcastle sit 10th with 26 points from 18 games. 18 is the fewest games played. So if you're going to take points per game instead, they'd be even higher, putting them amongst kind of Spurs and Leicester. So you don't want to get too bogged down in short-term runs of form. But when there's an obvious reason why that's happened, by bringing in somebody who's probably a better and more astute tactician than the manager himself, there seems reason to think that run of form might continue.
Yeah, and West Ham, George, I don't feel like they've built on their excellent season in the transfer market just yet, but you know, there's still time with the transfer window yet. There's a piece from Matt Slater, if anyone's interested, to go and look at, about potential takeover of West Ham. But where do you see them this season in the current state?
It's difficult because they had such a brilliant campaign last season and David Moyes is doing such a good job, but it feels like if I was to make a list of managers who might fall victim to their own success, Moyes would probably be quite high, because expectation levels have now grown so much bigger that anything worse than kind of a decent European challenge, for example, would be frowned upon. They finished sixth last season. It feels pretty unlikely to me they're going to be able to do that again. I'm not as bullish on them maintaining that level. I think the Premier League looks a pretty competitive one this season, and a couple of sides that I think are better set, namely Leeds, to challenge for those higher spots.
Very good. And the final game we're going to preview of the opening Premier League weekend is the Harry Kane derby. It's Spurs against Manchester City. Steve, where is he going to be come the end of the window?
Well, it feels like a coin toss, doesn't it, between the two sides. I think the market will be interesting as well to see his name on the team sheet. And if he's in the Spurs starting lineup, then I suppose it will be the market will shift to Spurs just a little bit. And Spurs, of course, have had a decent couple of games against Manchester City on their own turf. You know, they won the last two games by 2-0. I don't know if you remember back in November, Dan, they actually won this game and went top of the Premier League. Yes, Spurs at the top
remember.
Of the Premier League, and Manchester City were down to 11th. And if you just have a look at the stats on the game, just the basic stats of the two games, Hugo Lloris faced 41 shots over those two games and didn't score a goal. And just didn't concede a goal. So it's amazing that Spurs were able to keep out Manchester City. I'm not sure they will this weekend, although they are drifting slightly, currently around 4-6, which might be popular on a few coupons. It's all about whether Harry Kane, of course, starts the game.
Yeah, a lot of light comes back to the Manchester City squad as well, isn't there, George? So we're not really sure what Manchester City's lineup will be.
Yeah, it was like in the video of Grealish driving up to the City training ground, and he says, "Is little Phil here?" Hoping that Foden was going to be there waiting for him, but it turned out none of the England lads had come back yet, so Jack had to walk into a changing room of unfamiliar faces. We don't know who's going to play. It was obviously pretty abject display against Leicester in the Community Shield. I don't think we can read too much into that. I think the Kane narrative here is the key, because I personally have a feeling he won't be in the Spurs team or squad, possibly. I think the reason why it's all gone quiet is probably because of this game. I can't imagine Daniel Levy is going to be negotiating with the team that they're playing on the opening day of the season. I also think that a team with such strong succession planning like Man City don't get the 12th, 13th, 14th of August, unless they're pretty, without a recognised world-class striker, unless they're pretty sure they're going to get one. I think everybody at the club probably knew they were going to get Jack Grealish from about mid-May, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if they're just biding their time, seeing this through, and then it'll be tied up pretty quickly afterwards. That's in no way any inside knowledge, I should stress. But I have a feeling, knowing how these things often play out, I've got a feeling Kane won't be there. And if that is the case, then Spurs are obviously weaker. I saw Heung-Min Son is 8-1 first goal scorer, which could be exciting for some people, given he'll probably be their key goal threat. But I think this is probably going to be quite a tight affair. Nuno is a fairly defensive-minded manager. He'll go into this not looking to attack City, but probably to sit in and frustrate and to bring them on the counter. Under 2.5, again, seems a fair way to go at even money, especially given City's problems up front, shall we say, at the moment.
And Steve, your new favourite player, Jack Grealish, he seems to be the favourite for PFA Player of the Year.
Yeah, I thought I'd put him in as favourite, Dan, just for your benefit, really.
Thank you very much. Just
to give you the total rub. Listen, I mean, obviously KDB has won it for the last two seasons. He's our second favourite at 7-1, and no player has ever won it three times on the bounce, I don't think. I think the likes of Ronaldo have won it twice before, but that'll take some doing this season. Yeah, I suppose the question is, where will Jack play? How often will Jack play? I mean, if he was at Villa, I'd probably make him around a 16-1 chance. But the fact he has gone to Manchester City and he's now, and KDB has won it for the last two seasons, I think it's a perfect opportunity to put him as favourite. There's some talented guys in behind him, of course. Harry Kane at 8 and Bruno Fernandes, who was odds on for so much of last season to win it. He's at 12s with Sancho and Mo Salah at 16. But I'd like to know your thoughts, Dan, on where he will play for City, and is he going to be straight in the team?
I think he might, because of the England stuff and the late comers, I'm not sure he'll start at the weekend, but he'll play plenty of games. I did a podcast with someone the other day who was saying he'll play the same amount of games for City as he would have done for Villa, because Villa wouldn't have obviously gone all the way in all the competitions that City will go to. So he'll play plenty of games in plenty of positions, and he's good enough to do well there. I think he'll have a sensational season. But you know who I think the PFA Player of the Year will be?
Go on.
Rafinha.
No, not Rafinha. I think Van Dijk. No, I think Van Dijk, yes. You know, because I think the narrative will be about him coming back and the improvement he potentially gives Liverpool. I don't know what the odds are on it. He's just someone that links at me. Yeah, Van Dijk's the one for me, I think.
Great show. Yeah, I suppose if Liverpool come back, the defensive stability, like you say, and they're keeping all these clean sheets again, and he's such a leader of that team, isn't he? I think 16-1 is, for Virgil van Dijk, is a fair show.
With Jack, Dan, I loved it when he played on the left-hand side of the midfield three in the Championship for Villa. I thought that was a position for him, where him getting on the ball in deeper areas, being able to, you know, he's impossible to defend against in those deeper areas, where you know that he's going to happily take you on if you come at him, if you stand off him, he's going to have the pass to go past you as well. And I wonder if that's, given the fact that Pep likes to play Foden wide on the left, I think that could be where we see him most. I don't know if that's good news for the PFA Player of the Year awards, because him not being in advanced positions means not as many goals and assists. But I think in terms of his progression as a footballer, him playing there is, as a fanboy, it's pretty exciting to me.
Yeah, I think that they're going to be very dangerous in that kind of position. If you think about Manchester City, will have one sitter and then probably Grealish to the left of that guy and De Bruyne to the right, whipping in his crosses from deep like he does, and then Grealish running at you. You support for choice who you give the ball to as that defensive midfielder. That's going to be the easiest job in football. Mm. Give it to Grealish or give it to De Bruyne. Yeah, they're going to be scary. And if they get Kane as well, geez, it's going to be some season for Manchester City, I think. Just before we go then, a few strikers have completed moves, or there's one at least on the verge of a very, very big move. Let's talk about the goal scorer special, Steve.
Yeah, of course, Romelu Lukaku, he's coming back to the Premier League. Just look at his goal scoring figures. You know, he's got double figures, I think, in the seven full seasons he's played in the Premier League. He even scored 17 goals for the Albion in the Premier League. He must be a hell of a striker to get that many for us. We have a market on how many we'll think he'll score. And just the fact that we're 6-1 about him scoring 15 or less just goes to show what a quality signing that we think he's going to be for Chelsea in that vital position for them. And he will be in as second favourite behind Harry Kane to finish top goal scorer. So we're thinking 4-1. Beyond Harry Kane in the top goal scorer market. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of people there thinking, wow, you know, that could be a fair old price.
Yeah, me. I think it's a massive price. I think when you look at that market, it's a really interesting one this season, where normally you've got five or six of the elite strikers in the division, all single figure prices. Whereas this time around, We've got, what, two or three players in Harry Kane, 100-30, Lukaku 4-1, Salah 9-2. Playing
there's nothing else behind George, is there? There's nothing exactly. of any quality. There's so many question
and
marks.
And you've got Salah going to AFCON for a couple of weeks this season as well, which puts me off there. I mean, there are a couple of players who could muscle away. And I mean, Vardy would probably be the one that I'd go for at 25-1 because you're looking for a player who can score 20-plus goals. And with him, especially on penalties, he'd probably be my outsider. But I definitely think Lukaku... I think a lot of English football fans' attitude to Lukaku is going to be shown up this season. He is a player who was excellent for many spells at Everton, at United. I think he's improved further at Inter, and he comes here as one of the best strikers in world football for a team who are absolutely crying out for someone with his range of attributes. So, yeah, I'm very keen on Romelu, especially with Kane, the uncertainty around Kane, where Kane's going to be. I think an each way bet on Lukaku at 4-1, I'd be pretty surprised if I think only injury could probably stop that.
A bit more fevery there, George, from you.
Absolutely, yeah, they're
getting the four places.
You set the prices there, Steve. You can't blame me for taking them.
I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Danny Ings yet, Dan. I thought you'd be. I think that'll be your. I thought that would be your first port of call.
Well, I was going to come to it. First of all, if Lukaku is listening, I just want to apologise to him for Steve bringing up that dark time earlier on in his career when he had to play football at the Hawthorns every other week. I'm sure he didn't want to be reminded of those dark times. Yeah, Danny Ings. I don't think he'll be top scorer in the Premier League, but I think he'll score a lot of goals, George.
I think if he's fit, he will score a lot of goals. I think this is a really good move for him to be playing in a side that is going to be set up to cater for him scoring goals. I mean, you look at the relationship that that Emi Buendia had with Teemu Pukki. I think that there are similarities in Ings and Pukki's game, the way that they are both just deadly inside the penalty area, even though I think Danny Ings actually offers a lot more than he's given credit for, because he's just a very, very good footballer who's good on the channels, good at dropping in and playing in a two as well. The issue with Ings is injuries. You know, he has these soft tissue injuries that keep cropping up, and players who have those issues often are, you know, they're recurring injuries. And for that reason, it pains me to say it, I think that the 9-2 Ings, 10 or fewer, should be taken. I think that's a bit of value, not because he's not a very good striker, not because I don't think he'll score if he's playing, purely because I think it's probably shorter than 9-2 that he'll miss 10 or 15 games a season. And if he does, and if that is the case, especially with Ollie Watkins, who's going to be chomping at the bit to step up in his place after the campaign he had last season, it might just be a case of not getting enough minutes in order to score the 10 goals needed to get past that. So 9-2 seems a bit of value.
Well, thanks, George. I really enjoyed this podcast until you tried to ruin the end of it for me. And another striker on the move, Steve. Armstrong's arrived at Southampton, the reverse Shearer cycle for him.
Of course.
Anything on him?
One of my favourite players, I have to say, Armour. As George will know, I've been there. I have been following his career for the last few seasons. 178 shots he had last season for Blackburn. That's 50 more than Ivan Toney. 4.5 shots a game he'll have. Whether he'll have the opportunity to have that much against, in the Premier League, we'll have to wait and see. But he's 16-1, Dan, to get 15 or more goals. We're on the side of caution, really, in this Southampton side, who have been very well backed for relegation, I have to say. So we're 10-11, 8 or fewer. I don't know what you two guys think, but that's where it is at the market. I just hope he has a great season and we see the very best of Adam Armstrong. I'm really looking forward to see how he does.
Yeah, I think the key thing with Armstrong is the way he improved his game last season, where we've known for a long time that he's a player who can muster the spectacular and score these incredible goals. But last season at Blackburn, he was scoring every single goal you can imagine, whether it was right foot, left foot from 25 yards or 2 yards, and scoring with his head as well. He's a player who has developed into a proper poacher whilst also retaining that bit of star quality as well. So, I mean, if I had to have a bet in that market, I think the 15 or more at 16s would be the way to go, just in case, you know, Southampton, who have a manager in Hasenhüttl who, when things are going right, has proven himself to be very, very capable. A lot of loan players in from Chelsea who we don't know a great deal about. As I say, I wouldn't be putting it up as a strong bet, but if there's one way to go for a guy who is pure goals, I think that would be the way I would lean.
And just before we go, I want you both to just give me one other thing that we haven't spoken about that you want to talk about. Could be anything.
I mean, we've spoken about him quite a lot, but there's one other special that I want to flag up, which is
not Rafinha, is it?
No. It's Grealish versus Mount in the for
goal scorer match bet. Yeah,
in a season goal scorer match bet, and Grealish is the favourite. I think Mount's 11-10. I think I'd have him the other way around for the reasons I mentioned earlier. I think Jack is a player who will maybe play a bit deeper. I'm not even sure even if he did play wide left, if his goal return would be much higher than it was at Villa. Whereas I think Mason Mount, you know, we haven't spoken about Chelsea much in this podcast because they aren't playing on TV this weekend and we haven't previewed their game. But Mason Mount is a player who, you know, I'll go as far as saying a very poor Euros, even though he was part of a team who got to the final. But he's an unbelievable talent. I mean, I absolutely adore him, both out of possession and what he does going forward. I think under Thomas Tuchel last season, we saw the goal threat that he can be. Now, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's a player who really starts adding goals. Not quite Frank Lampard level goals, but he's somebody who progresses season on season now in terms of consistently posting double figure output. So I think if I was to be pricing up that match bet, as much as I love Jack, I think Mount would be the one I would have odds on.
Yeah, the big four to finish in the top four, I think that's a big talking point. I think if you speak to people, they just think, you know, the two Manchester clubs, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea are just going to be the top four this season. So we have got 6-4 out on that. I know George quite fancies Leicester to challenge, but whether they'll fall short again, just like the last couple of seasons, time will tell. So I'm just interested to see how the four big sides go this time around.
Good stuff. And all that's left to do is thank George and Steve for joining me and remind you guys that if you have enjoyed this, hit the subscribe button so you never miss a show. And if you're feeling generous as well, leave us a nice little review. Football's back. Hope everyone has a great weekend.
The Athletic.